Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, it does sound like we're in the right spot, Mike.
I hope so. I came in here, you know.
I know. Right here. On time, too.
Yeah, almost. I thought it was Friday. I'm not sure.
Well, what's up?
Well, you know, it's clear blue skies out there. It almost looks like a spring day, except it's only 43 degrees. But other than that, it's fine.
At least it's warmer than yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday did not warm up very well. I was cold from the minute I got up till the minute I got back into bed at night.
I think we had a whopping high of 38.
Yeah, somewhere near. My house was only about 32 when I got there.
Cold.
Kind of icy, you know.
Oh, I got a question. That reminds me.
Good.
You know my flower out there on the front of my apartment?
The one you've been talking about?
No, the other one, the big one. I can't remember the name of it now.
A big one?
Yeah, it's got yellowish brown leaves now underneath of it. Does that mean it's dying?
No, it means they're old. Frost damage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
The rest of it looks big and healthy.
Yeah. Is it an evergreen? Mm-hmm. It must be an evergreen, huh?
Yeah. The neighbor cut it out last summer, and it grew back stronger than ever.
Oh, yeah. That's what happens. If you recall, I say that a lot.
Yes, you do.
About pruning and things like that.
Yeah. Easter lily. That's what.
Oh, it's an Easter lily?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, it's just old leaves.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll generate new leaves.
Should I just leave it alone then?
Yeah, you could pull, you know, if the old leaves kind of get ugly or anything, just take scissors and just cut them off close to the stem.
Oh, okay.
That way there's no energy going to them and they'll go to new growth.
New growth. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's why we prune, sir. Well, anyway, thank you for listening if you are. And if you want to call, have a question about your landscaping or what kind of tree you might want, or do rhododendrons do good here? Yes, they do. Anyway, the phone number is 673-4464. And this show is about ideas and information and hints that you can do with your yard. But calls are important. I had a guy the other day call the nursery and asked to speak to me while I was there. And the first thing he said, "Boy, I love your show." He says, "I listen to it every week." And I don't remember what his name was, but he asked me some questions about the new lawn he was putting in and the type and the soil and what to do with it, that kind of thing. And, you know, I went through that with him and all that. And he said, "Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot." So, you know, there are other people listening. That's good.
All right. Did he say whether or not he had called into the show before? Or?
No, he just said he listened to it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Or,
that's cool.
Or listened to it all the time. I'm not sure what he said, but he was real friendly, real, you know, just sounded like a young guy, energetic, who's going to put in a new lawn and wanted to clarify a few points on new lawn installation.
Nice.
Topsoil. Yeah, it is.
That reminds me, I'm going to put in a plug. We're also heard on 93.9 now on FM.
Yep. Really? Huh. Too bad I can't listen to me on that.
We're covering the globe, AM and FM.
All right. Anyway, if you have a question, 673-4464 is the number, and we'll get you right through. You can ask your question. I'll give you some information, and it'll be right 99% of the time. How's that?
Sounds good.
I mess up once in a while, but never.
Not very much. No.
But at any rate, I know it's nice, and I know it's the blue skies are out there and all that, but the obvious thing is we need rain in Douglas County. You know, that's all there is to it. I've already noticed how the rivers have dropped since our last storm, 3 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm. I noticed that, too, yeah.
2 weeks ago, my little creek has really dropped down, too.
Rain likely, though, this weekend, it says.
Well, yeah, but likely is not for sure.
That's true.
You know, it's a different definition, but I hope it's true, and I hope it's significant. You know, about four or five good storms would help us, not back-to-back, but, you know, a week apart or something like that would help our snowpack, of course, and soak the ground here at our lower elevations. Mm-hmm. And that will then, you know, about April or May, you know, when spring begins to roll in, you know that the ground is wet. you know, that we have sufficient snowpack to keep the rivers and the streams running fresh and clean. And that's good. So if we are facing, God forbid, but if we are facing another below average rainfall year, what do we do for our landscape? How do we treat it? What do we, you know, what are the things we look for? And first of all, don't panic.
We call the governor for help.
Oh, goodness. No, don't get me started. But first, like I said, don't panic and start overwatering your existing plants, you know, just to think you're going to make up for it. You won't. But like I say 100 times, always check your soil moisture prior to watering, you know, and right now nothing needs water. You know, maybe your indoor plants, but nothing outside. Because established plantings will survive in drier conditions if they've been in, say, for more than a year or two, and the root system has developed, the root system has taken hold into the new soil. They've got a great chance of doing it. Maybe not every one of them. Maybe there are some tender ones out there that won't. But for the most part, most of what you plant that works here in Douglas County, like I say, after a year of being in the ground and healthy and putting out its roots, it'll probably survive within the drier conditions that we might experience. But when you are looking at it, you know, May or June or July, and you're looking at your plants, you're looking at your yard in general, just be aware of how they're growing, the overall health, you know, how do the leaves look. Don't go, like I say, panicking and running up your water bill unnecessarily, because that's not going to really help at all that much. But the strongest ones are gonna survive, and that's gonna give you some information about what you need to replant with. And the things that will probably take the biggest hit if it is that dry and hot again will be the annuals and the perennials, you know, the petunias, the marigolds, and things like that, you know, because they're tough, but they need
water.
A little bit of water because their root systems aren't that deep and they're not that extensive. So
so it sounds like the Easter lily might survive a little.
Well, yeah, the Easter lily, believe it or not, it's a very tough plant. You can ignore them things for a long time and go, oh, yeah, I forgot to water that. Well, it's still looking good, so you don't think about it.
Right,
But you put your finger in the soil and it's bone dry and dust comes out of it, you know. You go, oh, yeah, I think that needs some water, yeah. But new plantings, they're going to survive with weekly watering, you know, once a week, even maybe stretching it out to 10 days, maybe a week and a half. But, you know, a deep watering, you know, even in midsummer when it's been dry for a long time and it's, you know, incessantly 90 degrees and above, you know, with no clouds or that kind of thing, the once a week deep watering will be adequate. They will survive. They may not look great. They may not be growing like they had in the past with as much lush growth, but they're not going to die on you. They're going to be okay. Now, a good move to help you in all this is, you know, we use bark mulch around here like it's going out of style.
Yeah. And, it's everywhere.
And it ain't. There's a lot of it out there. But if you have plant beds that you put bark in and that kind of thing, and it's been a couple, 3 years, 5 years, whatever, since you've renewed the bark, why don't you go ahead and remulch it? All your planting beds, remulch them, and add 3 or 4 inches of mulch to the existing, because that mulch will help retain the soil moisture and keep the root systems cool. And it's funny thing about mulch, you in the middle of the summer, you can, or you know, you look at it and say dry and just kind of crusty on top, but if you actually dig down in there about 3 or 4 inches, you'll find that there's moisture, and that bark mulch really retains the moisture.
Wow.
Not it's never soggy wet, but it's at least it's cool. And if you plant your plants with some sort of composty material or fine grind bark or something like that, like I preach about all the time, you're going to find that moisture all the way down into the root systems of the plants, and consequently they're going to survive. And that's a big deal. So, you might think of it that way and say, hey, gosh, I better add some mulch. And that's okay. There's plenty of mulch in Douglas County. There is no shortage. and
we don't get it from China.
No, we don't buy it from China. I mean, they don't have trees. But with that added mulch, your watering schedule will be reduced. You won't have to water as much. And you may get by with only two deep waterings per month, you know. And especially if something's been in the ground, say, three growing seasons or four growing seasons, you're probably good for once a month type of watering, as long as you water deep. And that's a whole lot better to water deep and slowly so it penetrates down into the root ball than going out there every day for 15 minutes or every other day for 15 minutes and just kind of squirting it, because that doesn't do anything. Because if it's hot and you're squirting, say, with a hose, a large percentage of that water is actually being evaporated before it even hits the ground. So that's why you have to water properly. And by watering properly, your plant materials are going to survive. Now, lawns, of course, people have tendencies to mostly underwater a lawn and thinking short spurts of, you know, 15 minutes every day is going to be good for the lawn. Wrong. Definitely wrong. It'd be better to water it for an hour once a week, and that way the water can get down into the root system. And as the grass grows, and the other part of that is, don't cut your lawn short. The longer the lawn is, you know, it might be appear a little bit shaggy, but that's okay, because the shaggier it is, it means it's shading the soil, and shading the soil keeps the evaporation from the soil to a bare minimum. There's going to be some evaporation, but where the root systems are is still damp. But if you cut that thing short, and you'll see the first thing, you know, you can drive around neighborhoods and tell who cuts their lawn too short, because they're usually yellow. By the 4th of July, they're yellow or kind of light green maybe. And then they pump the water to it and maybe a little bit of fertilizer, and it grows a little bit. Then they cut it short again. Uh-huh. Well, you're cutting off the growing ends and getting down to the part that's not growing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it tries to regenerate itself, and it gets going again, and then bingo, the homeowner cuts it short again. So don't do it that way. Let them get a little shaggy in the hot weather. On all of our maintenance contracts, we got about 40 maintenance contracts that we take care of. And we do that. You get into about July, hey, let that put the level of those blades up an inch. That'll save the lawn,
mm-hmm.
and it will stay greener, and there will be less chance of any weed material or moss or any of that getting in there, or some kind of a bug or a fungus or something along those lines getting in there and further destroying or making your lawn ugly. So that's...
You just described Dad's method there.
Yeah, well, it's not just Dad's method. I can show you hundreds of them if you want to drive around with me some day in July and take a look. And people think, well, that's the best thing to do, and we'll get out there and do it, and we don't have to do it every
again.
Week.
Right.
We don't have to do it again.
That's what his, yeah.
But then you've got this kind of yellowish, light green piece of grass out there that doesn't enhance your landscape
good
at all.
Good for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So, but
well, on that note, should we take a break?
If you insist.
All righty. We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN. And what's our number here, Mike?
673-4464.
There you go.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are here with a whopping 45 degrees.
Yeah, it's time to take the shirt off and lay in the parking lot.
Sunbathe.
Anyway, I'm talking about watering and what it, to expect and how to do it if we should have another dry, hot summer.
Yeah.
And that's not my what I want by any stretch of the imagination. I would love to have an inch and a half of rain once a month just for the heck of it, you know? It'd be nice.
Every month?
Every month.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, one year, my kids were little, fair time was rolling in, and it started to rain the day before the fair started,
mm-hmm.
and it rained the entire week of fair, and my kids were, you know, 4, 5, 6, that kind of thing. And we went, they wanted to go to the fair, so we went to the fair, stood in the rain. There wasn't very many people there. We were one of the few stupid ones. And my kids wanted to ride every stinking ride
sure
in the place, and they just had a great time. And we didn't stay real long, maybe an hour or two at the most.
Yeah.
But when we all got back to the car, everybody was wet.
Oh, yeah.
But
I remember those years of rain during the fair.
Yeah. And here's the thing. As the fair was ending, the rain quit.
And yep.
Went back into summer, and within 10 days to 2 weeks, our hills started turning green again.
Mm.
You know, it was like spring almost, and the temperatures weren't really, you know, they were in the 80s,
yep.
and it was August, you know, end of August kind of, and here our hills looked like it was March or April. You know, just from that little bit of rain for that week.
And that's something?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
So Rain is a good thing. At any rate, I've done a lot of tests over the years, you know, to see what limits that trees and shrubs can survive in, you know.
Yeah.
And I've killed a few things, but I did it on purpose, not because I made a mistake. I wanted to see how tough they were, how long they could last without actually, you know, giving it up. And I had a couple of roadies that they were out away from the house, and I built a mound and all that. And they weren't really good ones. I got them off a job. The person didn't want them, and they were ugly to begin with.
You didn't find them in the landfill?
No, not that time. I found them in somebody's yard. who says, get rid of these ugly things and put me some new ones in. I said, okay. So I took them home, planted them. Well, they lasted a couple, 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And, but they were... They were hard pressed. And so last summer, when it was so hot for so long, I thought, well, here's a test. I'm not going to water them. I'm going to see what they do. They both died.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they both died. But I hadn't given them any water for like 2 months. And it took that long for them to finally, you know, give it up. And that was it. I could have saved them, but I didn't want to. They were ugly anyway.
Well, that's not nice.
No, I know. But the other things, and I've spoken about this in the past, is my Japanese maples. I love Japanese maples. I got them planted all over the place. And I've got some fruit trees up on my hill that never are watered other than what falls on the rain, and they're growing well. I mean, they're not super duper because there's some fir trees and some other oaks and madrones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they get kind of filtered sun. It's not the hot baking stuff that you get out here in the parking lot. But they've lived and they've grown. And, of course, the deer have gone in and munched on them and pruned them for me. So, you know, I just want to see, well, how tough is this tree? Can it survive on its own?
Mm-hmm.
See, at the one end of my field, on the end of my property, so I got an apple tree. I've estimated it, so it's over 100 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
I know that. It's pretty good size. And that thing, you know, it has huge apples on it every year, big yellowish green ones,
yeah,
you know, big as a softball, and it's loaded. And I prune it every about, maybe every 5 years or so. I give it a butcher job. And it just sprouts up and grows more apples. It has no fertilizer, no care, no water, no anything. And,
it still survives.
It still survives. It just does the thing. So you can very sparingly keep these trees and things alive in your yard. You don't have to float them. You don't have to buy a water truck full of water and water your place. They will survive, and it'll keep your water bill at some sort of a payable amount, you know. Because if the rivers go down again like they did last year, there were some water shortages here and there. And I had to, even on my nursery, I had to crank back the watering times and just be real careful because I only had so much water that I could use. Mm-hmm. I got 8 acres for crying out loud, mm-hmm. and not all 8 acres is under growth right now, probably three of it. But the 3 acres that are, the plants are in pots. And pots require more water simply because they're sitting above the ground. The the pots are black, you know, plant pots are black. And
it absorbs the heat.
Exactly. It absorbs the heat and increases the rate of evaporation from the root systems. And so you water them just enough to keep the roots alive. And the plants, they're still alive. They look, you know, fairly good. They don't look like springtime. But in August, that's, you know, people understand that. But I learned how much water they actually needed to survive and go into the fall. And all of them, like right now that we have in stock, is looking good.
Cool.
And, you know, they're growing, you know, well, not yet, but they're budding up and looking like they're going to grow new leaves. So.
All right.
So
must be doing something right.
Well, I'm hoping I am because a lot of this is experimental. I'm just, you know, testing things. See, well, this one's tough. This one isn't. So I got to either put this in a more protected, shady place, you know, shaded from the afternoon hot sun, like our rhodies and azaleas. I have, I've got a eucalyptus tree I planted years ago that shades that area real well. Mm. I used to have to shade cloth that on top of the structure to keep them shaded. Well, the shade cloth, I don't have it on there anymore. And that tree, when that sun, that summer sun gets over there about 4 o'clock when it's really hot, my rhodies and azaleas and some of the hydrangeas that we keep over there are in the shade. So that's less evaporation on them, and all you have to do is give them minimal water, and they still look good.
And it's all natural.
And it's exactly. So you can, you know, like I say, look at your yard. The things that have been, the plants and trees and shrubs that have been in there for, you know, over 2 years, I wouldn't worry about much. You know, like I say, once a month deep soak would probably be more than sufficient. And if you're a petunia, marigold, geranium type of person for, you know, for your front entry or something like that, you have a small planter bed, they can use the water that you normally would have done with your other shrubs. You don't have to do those other shrubs. Give it to the perennials and the annuals who have the more shallow root systems, and they'll survive and they'll thrive and they'll look good for you. So it's just learning. It's learning the needs of your plants that are on your property, and getting as much information as you can, and just experimenting and saying, well, I'll skip a few more days, see what happens. But if you see things starting to wilt, hey, shoot it full of water, and within an hour it'll be back. It'll be back to regular. So, but anyway, with my Japanese maples, they don't get watered. The ones near the house kind of do, but the ones up on a hill, they don't.
Nah.
And they're living, and they look good. And toward the end of September, the leaves, instead of turning brilliant red, turn dull brown for the most part because of the dryness. But as I inspected them after all the dead brown leaves fell off, I inspected them, and they were all budded up. They all had new buds for this coming spring. And I've looked at them since then, and what they did do, they produced a lot of seeds because the plants under stress will produce more seed. And if you stressed an apple tree, for instance, it's going to produce more fruit because it wants to continue
stay
to live.
Alive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More fruit, more seeds, blah, 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 and it goes. So that's how that works.
Have you ever taken any seeds off of that 100-year-old apple tree and planted it somewhere else?
No, I haven't, but I want to. I want to, because that's a tough thing. And, you know, it's like probably has a diameter of maybe 30 inches. You know, it's a pretty good-sized tree.
Yeah.
And one side of it is kind of hollow because, you know, whatever got injured 50, 60 years ago or something like that. And it looks like squirrels live in there now. But it doesn't affect the tree. The tree just grows like a, like it was in a greenhouse or something.
Yeah, just kind of ignores the injury.
Yeah, so, yeah, no problem. I can get by this thing.
I'm tough.
Yeah. So, you know, the deep watering, like I say, deep watering infrequently causes that root system on most plants to follow the moisture level as it goes downward. It doesn't, the roots don't stay near the surface. They're not stupid. They want to survive. So they go down and follow any moisture there. So, but, you know, the frequent watering, as I've said in the past, frequent watering keeps the soil moisture on top, if you will, the top, say, 3 or 4 inches. And so consequently, the root systems are more shallow. And then if it dries out, those shallow root systems kind of just dry up and go away and the plant dies. So that's why you want to water deeply. And if you like shallow watering, if you miss a week, those plants suffer. But if you have those plants develop so that the root systems are down, you can miss 3 weeks and the plant still lives. So, and you save, I don't know what people pay for water anymore, because I get mine out of a creek and and out of a spring.
My landlord pays for mine.
Well, so. That's the same as getting it out of a creek.
Yeah.
but anyway, there's only a few months, really, when it's really hot and dry every day, and that's the critical time to keep your eyeball on the water. And I'm referring to like July, August, and September. I mean, June is pretty good. I mean, it's starting to get warm, but we don't have too many 100-degree days in June. So after that 4th of July weekend, all of a sudden it seems like the temperature is, maybe let's get up there about 112 or something
and
like
stay
that.
Stay there for a few days.
Yeah. Okay, enough on that watering stuff. New subject. Bare root season, I said, is
and
now.
And that'd be a good time to take another break.
Another break?
Yep.
I'm just getting warmed up and you're making me take breaks.
New subject. Bare root what? Trees?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, gotcha. I remember. All right, we'll be right back in a couple of minutes with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. And you're more than welcome to call in as well.
673-4464.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty. We are back, obviously. 438 and still 45 degrees there, Mike.
Yeah, well, if it gets up to about 70 before I get out of this box we're in, I don't know. But anyway, I started on a new subject, bare root season.
You know, yeah.
Is now, it's going until, you know, on average to mid-March in a wet year, maybe the 1st of April, you know, if it's wet.
Till the real spring.
Yeah, till the real spring. So if you're wanting to plant fruit trees or shade trees or anything like that, now is your best time, simply because they are dormant and inexpensive, cheap. They're less expensive when they're bare root than if they're in a pot. Because when you put them at the end of the bare root season, any trees that we have left over, we pot them up. And for the summertime sales and the fall sales. And it takes about 6 weeks minimum for a potted tree to fully root out. But by the time you have the time in, the fertilizer, the labor, the material, the pots and everything else, the price basically doubles.
Sure.
And because you're moving around, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of work to it. So if you want a tree, buy it bare root and plant it now. And now my best advice is to dig your planting holes before you come to the nursery to buy the trees. In other words, if you think, well, I want 5 fruit trees. So dig your 5 holes. Have them ready to go. And have your soil mix ready, already mixed by each hole. And so when you bring your trees home, mm-hmm. it's quick work to plant them. They're not sitting around for, you know, you did all the heavy labor. The easy part is putting the bare roots into the hole and putting the new soil in and then watering it once just to kind of settle the whole mess. And that's the easy way to do it. When we do, you know, some folks call us up and say, hey, yeah, I want you know, four trees, five trees, or whatever. We'll go out and pre-dig the holes and then bring the trees and or plants, sometimes even plants, to the job and put them in, because the majority of the labor has already been done, and, you know, nothing's sitting around. Nothing gets delayed, if
Make
you will. Yeah.
Quick job of it.
It does. It yeah. does. And always put the youngest guys on digging the holes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially if it's in hard clay with rocks and stuff like that, you know.
That's good for them.
Yeah. But once these guys are planted, you give them a dose of vitamin B1, and I've talked about vitamin B1, you know, which stimulates root growth and eliminates transplant shock. And it works every time. Every single time it works, and you do it. Oh, you continue with the B1 watering, say, once a month till about May or June, and then you can do the regular water. But there's no fertilizing during this period. You don't want to buy a bag of whatever, triple 16 from the co-op, and throw handfuls around your new trees or shrubs. It'll kill them. Yeah. So let them go. No fertilizing. And when the trees are fully leafed out, you can begin to lightly fertilize. And when I say fully leafed out, we're talking June, maybe. You can give them a little bit, you know, spread it around the base of the tree. Don't get it on the trunk or anything like that. Keep it out there where the drip line is. And make sure, and then you can do it again, say, in October, mid-October, and then the fertilizer will get down into the root system, say, by the end of November, but the roots won't absorb it. It'll store the fertilizer, but it won't be usable because there's no leaves on the trees, and the trees are dormant, and the shrubs are dormant. So what happens is they save it up till spring, and when spring pops and it's ready, they're ready to go because they got food. Simple.
Didn't know they could do that.
Well, yeah, they're pretty smart.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they know how to.
Smarter than some people I've met.
Well, you know, we won't go into that.
No, we won't.
But and then follow the directions. Read the directions on the bag, you know, and always buy a good, well-balanced fertilizer with trace elements, and it'll have all this information right on the bag. Don't buy what's on sale just because it's cheap and you think, well, gosh, I can get three bags instead of one. The one bag will outdo those three cheap bags in a hot minute. So, and the fertilizers come in many varieties and strengths. And lawn food, for instance, is high in nitrogen and not the best for shrubs and trees newly planted, because the nitrogen percentage is so high and nitrogen is kind of hot. Uh-huh. So you want to look for a fertilizer that's formulated for shrubs and trees. It's more balanced. And it'll say right on the package, shrub and tree fertilizer or tree fertilizer. And then the lawn food will say lawn food on it or lawn fertilizer. So keep them separate unless you're an expert. And then you can kind of mix it up and see what you can do and not kill things. But for fertilizing shrubs and trees, it usually has a very well-balanced formula, and like I like to use rhododendron fertilizer or azalea fertilizer, because that's kind of a low nitrogen, high phosphorus, high potassium. The phosphorus and the potassium are for the root growth and for the overall health of the tree. And the nitrogen is it's what kind of forces growth and makes everything good and green. But if you overdo the nitrogen, you can blow up the whole system.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But the Rhodi fertilizer, like I say, is good because it has high phosphorus and potassium. Those are the second and third ingredients on the package. And what phosphorus and potassium does, it builds hardy root systems and produces blooms and fruits. So that's what you're looking for. And a well-balanced plant diet will produce overall plant health, just like a human diet that is well balanced with like fruits and vegetables that your mother made you eat, and it leads to good health in the long run. And if you just go to McDonald's every day and get a super burger, you're lacking some nutrition in there. You're lacking some things that your body needs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like a cheap fertilizer. You know, I don't want to go beyond those details, but if you get those, you know, those vegetables and those fruits and things like that,
everything's better that way,
and it does feed your body and mm-hmm. keeps you healthy,
makes you feel better.
Yes, and the same thing works on shrubs and trees. As we slowly are progressing in the spring, we'll begin to see some flowering shrubs here pretty quick. And many of these early bloomers are rhododendrons, azaleas, and camellias. There's camellias blooming now just about everywhere. They're a very early bloomer, most of them.
Oh, I was going to say, is it because of the fake spring? Or?
No. Even if it was raining, the camellias would be blooming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mine at the nursery, my big mama plants that are planted there as a part of the landscape, they're opening up and looking real good. Now my grandson butchered about three of them because we got a new camera system in there, and they were too big, so we had to cut them real short.
Oh. Yeah.
But they'll come back.
Yeah,
there's still a few leaves on them, and there's a few flower buds, but they're all starting to swell, and you're starting to see color.
Oh.
And so it's you know, spring is knocking at the door. And so, you know, what's interesting about those kinds of plants, it's so hardy. They're just extremely hardy. The flip side of that coin is that most people regard them as tender plants that need a lot of care.
Yeah, like the pansies.
Right. No way. Just leave them alone, for goodness sakes. But, you know, so just the opposite is true. Most varieties are very hardy, and they don't need full-time pampering or anything like that. That's what kills a lot of them.
It's kind of like that Easter lily. I kind of like it. I don't have to.
Exactly. And a lot of people's reactions would be, oh, it needs more water, or it needs some fertilizer. Well, that's what would kill it all the way down. You know, it's just, and I have, I've told the story before about whatever I killed. Orchid, maybe it was.
Yeah.
My orchid story. Well, when I quit watering it and just left it in the windowsill, in about 2 months, there was new leaves coming on it, and it hadn't been watered. It hadn't been fertilized. It finally said, finally, the guy quit watering us, you know. Now we can live.
I can feel a lot better now.
Yes, I do. Now, on these rhodies and the azaleas, and the rhodies especially, in the wild, they grow anywhere from coastal climates to high elevation mountain regions, and they've been around for a very, very long time.
Wow.
And the written record that I found of, for instance, deciduous azaleas dates back to the 4th century B.C.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not China, is it?
No, it didn't say what country. It just said, I think Asia, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because it talks, a lot of our plant materials originated in Asia for some reason that we have here. And azaleas, for instance, were first mentioned in Japanese poetry in A.D. 759.
That's a couple of days ago.
Yeah, a couple of days ago. And, you know, Japanese poetry, and they're talking about the azaleas in bloom and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, whoa, man. But they've been, you know, cultivated ever since. As a highlight in any Japanese garden, you know, and of course we inherited them, and azaleas and rhodies were first grown in Europe around 1680.
Wow.
There was nurseries and plant people growing these things in 1680. And we had wild azaleas and rhodies in America. But the vast majority of our varieties came from Europe, Japan, China, and all that. And they were brought in by early settlers and merchant seamen who, you know, floated all over the world doing their trade. And some of them were plant guys. And they go, wow, that's a cool plant. I think I'll dig that up and take it to America.
Take it back with
me. Yeah, and that's exactly how that stuff got here. So do we have a break?
We do. Last break.
All right.
Final break of this afternoon on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. And what's the number again, Mike?
673-4464, if anybody's listening.
There you go. Thank you.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It is 4:52, and we're hanging in there with 45 degrees yet.
Yeah, it's not 80.
No.
That's a good sign.
Well, for this time of the year, you're right.
You bet. Anyway, I just got into the azaleas and arodes and that kind of thing. And like I said earlier, the arodes were first grown, I mean commercially grown, in 1680. You know, geez Louise, who were these people that did this? But and the vast majority of our varieties came from Europe, Japan, China, and they were brought by the merchant seamen and the explorers and stuff that sailed all over the world. And, you know, early on, these were expeditions back in the 1600s for plants the world over. I mean, in the 1600s, got on ships and went to different countries across the ocean just for plants. And I don't know, what in the world? But I was just kind of doing the history thing and learning about this. And they brought them back to the USA and began to propagate them. And it seems that the nursery business has been around for hundreds of years, not just in the last 100, but in many hundreds. And between 1900 and 1904, there were 4 new species of rhododendrons were brought in from China. 40 new species that weren't here. Then 360 new species were here by 1911. So from all over the world, you know, to this day, there are plant people still looking for new varieties, primarily in Asia and the Himalaya Mountains, of all places. The Himalayas, you know, the tall, snow-covered peaks that you see that mostly, you know, in that area in Asia, they're finding rare rhododendron. They're not rare, but they're different than what we have. And in the Himalayas, for instance, 2/3 of the world's 800 rhodi species can be found, and they grow between 2,000 and 18,000 foot of altitude, of elevation. Yeah, and in my research, they said, I don't know the author, but one of the world's largest rhododendrons was discovered in that area, and it was 55 feet tall with a 6-foot diameter trunk, and it had red flowers. Now, I can't even imagine, in my wildest imagination, a rhododendron 55 feet tall. Now, I have seen them here in Douglas County that are 20 feet tall, and they look like beautiful trees, but they're very, very old, and because they don't grow, you know, very, very fast at all. And they're also, rhodies are also found in tropical climates like in New Guinea, Malaysia, and the Philippines. And they're a different type of rhodie, but they're still a rhododendron. Ironically, none have ever been found in either Africa or South America. And they can grow just about anywhere except maybe the desert, you know. And I don't know why there are none in Africa or South America, or at least nobody stumbled upon them. but rhodies are tough, you know, and anybody that kills a rhododendron is not paying attention to the plant. You know, if you give it, you can plant it in pure bark mulch. You don't have to have a bit of dirt, bit of soil. You can dig a hole, put 6 inches of bark mulch at the bottom of the hole, put a brand new rhododendron in there, cover the rest of it up with bark mulch, water it once a week, and it's going to do fine. It doesn't need
nice.
Any dirt.
My kind of plant.
Yeah, and azaleas are the same way. Camellias are the same way. My big camellias at the nursery, we built a planter about little over 3 feet tall, and we filled it with bark, and we planted those mama camellias in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been in there 20-something years, and they're gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Didn't even, I mean, they bloom like they're spectacular every spring.
And you don't have too much to them.
No. And my daughter, Jill, who runs the nursery, you know, she'll water it, but she won't soak it.
Yeah.
You know, they'll get whatever water that's left over from watering the potted plants.
Yeah. You know? Leftovers.
Yeah, but leftovers. And maybe in July and August, she'll concentrate a little bit more on them. But they don't miss a leaf. They don't wilt. They don't, I mean, they just grow. They're outrageous plants.
Wow.
And when I first put them in, they were like, oh, 3 feet tall. And now the unpruned ones are 12 feet tall, probably 10 feet wide.
Good heavens.
And they'll have, oh, 200-300 blooms on them each.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
that's a couple of blooms.
Yeah, a couple of blooms. But I'm just trying to stress to the listening audience how tough these plants actually are and where they've been found growing wild around the world, in the Himalayas, in China, in India, all these places.
You got to be tough if you're living in China.
Yeah, and India, my goodness gracious. But they can grow anywhere except, like I say, the desert. I know my father-in-law tried one in the desert, and I already told that story, and he did everything I told him to do, but it was still, for some reason, it just his rhododendron that he put in there didn't do well.
Didn't like it.
No. Nah. But there are more than 800 species of rhododendron. And and 800 plant species they're fantastic. They grow. And also from that 800 species, the plant crazies have hybridized another 17,000 varieties.
Jeez.
By cross-pollination and grafting. And so you've got a real.
There's
got
to be one there for everybody.
There is, there has to be. So you might say, well, what are the differences between an azalea and a rhodi? They're in the same family, but azaleas have small leaves, and the leaves are narrow and pointed, where rhododendron leaves are large, broad, long, and kind of blunt. The flowers on the azaleas are smaller and flatter, and singular. Where the rhodi flowers are kind of bell-shaped, they're large and they're in trusses, and that's the end of the show.
Yep.
Well, I'll talk more about rhodis and azaleas next week, so tune in and thanks for listening.
It sneaks up on us, don't it?
It does.
All righty, what are we going to talk about? Well, we're going to just kind of wrap it up.
What?
Next week.
Have a lot more information on rhodis and azaleas because it's the time and they're starting to appear.
Cool. All right.
Goodbye.
See you later.